Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about those things that worked for me, but also those epic fails that I've made along the way. I interview experts, and I do all of this because I believe to my core, the teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And before we get started, I just want to say, if you do not follow me elsewhere besides the podcast, it's almost always just at Spencer Education. So my blog is spencereducation.com. My email list is at the bottom. You can sign up right there. My Facebook and my Instagram and I think my TikTok too are all at Spencer Education as well. But my YouTube is spencervideos.com. So if you are interested in learning more and connecting more, just check out those spaces where I share a lot of short form media. I share a lot of visual media, just stuff that's different than the podcast. And so with that in mind, without further ado, let's dive right into today's topic, which is all about this idea of contextual thinking and why it's important in an age of AI. It's something I got into briefly in the AI roadmap and in the Depth Advantage, but I want to spend some time just talking about this idea of conceptual thinking. We're going to start with something, a bit of a story, a snapshot of contextual thinking. So my friend Anna is a middle school science teacher who had her students do a mini project when they researched eco-friendly solutions to reduce human environmental impact and then created short PSA videos. Last year, she noticed a disturbing trend, though. All of their solutions and big ideas seemed generic and kind of vague. Many of their scripts were verbose and used similar, "it's not this, it's that" structure that seemed indicative of AI. The end result was something impressive, but artificial. It lacked the casual phrasing of her seventh grade students that she honestly kind of loved. It felt a bit depressing, she told me. Like, I know that my seventh graders aren't going to create PSAs that will end up in a national media campaign, but I've always loved hearing their voices. But this felt dull. She had a nagging feeling that they had outsourced most of their thinking and their creative process to generative AI. So she made some big changes. She connected the project to local ecological challenges and brought in a guest speaker that they could interview. She had them storyboard their PSAs by hand and type them out on Google Docs with timestamps. It took a little more prep work, but it ultimately paid off. The students created work that was more thoughtful and creative. They seemed more engaged. In other words, it was more authentic. The difference here was context. And it turns out that contextual thinking is one of the critical... skills that students will need in an age of generative AI. Let's talk about the need for contextual thinking given AI. At its core, AI struggles with contextual understanding. Every chatbot is a prediction machine that uses algorithms trained on massive amounts of data. But AI doesn't know what's going on. It's not self-aware, which is a good thing. Otherwise, we'd have Skynet and Blade Runner and every other dark dystopian nightmare. We want our AI to not be good at that. In other words, AI can't read the room. It's really good at generating solid general responses, but it struggles with context. It can explain solutions to common problems, but it tends to be vanilla. And the beauty is we get to take that vanilla and make it our own. Now, I recently shared in a podcast episode about how we can create AI-resistant writing. Context was a huge part of what will make student writing stand out in creative work. And similarly, in problem solving, contextual understanding helps students learn how to solve the types of problems that they'll actually solve in life, especially in an age of AI. Contextual thinking requires noticing the particular details of a specific situation. It pulls students into a space where they wrestle with nuance and they try to make sense out of the trade-offs of a solution. Context pushes students to understand constraints that are distinctly local, and this leads to divergent thinking. At times, they engage in systems thinking and empathy with an authentic audience. But how do we actually make this a reality? Well, I want to share six different ideas. Let's start off with number one, focus on authentic context in problem solving. When I taught middle school math, my students struggled with a specific word problem on a district benchmark standardized test. Students underperformed despite the fact that they had aced more challenging problems. And I was baffled because this should have been super easy. The problem essentially said, you are a catcher throwing a runner out at second base. Using the Pythagorean theorem, determine the distance between home plate and second base by looking up the dimensions at the diagram below. Now, it was a simple problem, and at first I assumed that maybe students didn't know what home plate, first base, second base, third base all were, because those weren't labeled in the diagram. So I was like, well, maybe that's the issue. But as we reviewed the problem afterward, I realized that that wasn't the issue at all. Instead, it was a problem of what Dan Meyer refers to as pseudo-context. This is what happens when we ask students to apply certain math skills and concepts in a way that doesn't reflect how we actually use math in real life. No catcher would ever use the Pythagorean theorem in this situation. I can't imagine Cal Raleigh seeing a runner take off towards second base and saying, what would Pythagoras do? At this point, I decided to rewrite the problem and integrate it into our new statistical analysis unit. This time, I changed the context. I can't remember it entirely, but this is the basic idea. Maryvale High School, which is the high school my students would have gone into, just won our first baseball state championship in decades. You are the custodian who also manages the field. You're so excited because your son was on that championship team his senior year. But this morning, you received an email informing you that members of the other team are claiming that the bases were moved to make it easier for your team to steal and harder for the catcher to throw runners out. You can't measure the distance from home plate to second base because of the mound, but it might be possible to prove it mathematically, given the dimensions of the field that we just measured. I also included statistics from the game, the players, the average stolen bases for each team, you get the idea. So they had the bonus option of using statistics to make their point. It's the same essential problem, but the context is different. My students actually enjoyed the second problem. I know that sounds crazy, but they really enjoyed it. Part of it was the fact that I actually didn't tell them they had to use the Pythagorean theorem. They had to remember something they learned and apply it. But another part of it was context. This problem felt like the way that people actually use math in real life. It was connected to something suspenseful and high stakes. Honestly, there are so many better contexts for the Pythagorean theorem. Most of them would connect it to design and construction, which would be awesome. But that's not what we did. We stuck with the baseball one, and I revised the problem. So as we think about how students solve problems in both math and science, we can be intentional about tying the problems to an authentic context. This often increases engagement, but also it makes the learning more memorable. The context becomes the hook for students to access when they engage in retrieval practice. Number two, add contextual elements to research. As students engage in research, they need to pay attention to the context of the information. Where is it coming from? Who is the intended audience? What emotions does the information try to elicit in you? And this is part of why I love using the forensic approach developed by Jennifer Lagarde and Darren Hudgens. I have interviewed Jen Lagarde, I think, twice on this podcast. She's a phenomenal librarian consultant. But they use the metaphor of a digital detective to describe this mindset. There are a couple different lenses. The first one is the triggers lens. Digital detectives use this lens to try to make sense out of the information and elicit an emotional response. The next lens is the access lens. Here, digital detectives use this lens to see how platforms and devices determine what is a credible source. For example, a news story looks different on a mobile device than on a browser. It also is a chance to think about how the community impacts interpretations of information. So the way people on X or Facebook or Instagram interact with news stories will vary. And again, notice there's a context piece here. Then we get into the forensic lens. This is the lens that we tend to think of as information literacy. Here's where students investigate the information from a place of curiosity. We then have the motives lens. This is where students think about the motives of those who are creating information. Like any great detective, they consider why people might manipulate information. Notice how this approach goes beyond simply analyzing information for accuracy, and it takes into consideration the context of the information as well. But we can also go beyond just this approach in terms of information literacy, and we can also incorporate contextual thinking into the types of research students actually engage in. At a younger age, students might do observational research and short field trips as they find aspects of learning in their surroundings. For example, if they're learning about 3D shapes, they can find specific examples in a scavenger hunt. In a design challenge where they have to co-design an inclusive playground, they might do observational research of how people use that playground. So they're doing like observations to see like how are students actually playing, and let's look at it. At all ages, students can interview guest speakers who have firsthand knowledge of the content. This is especially true of something like an oral history project. They can do surveys. There's a lot of types of surveys they can do, and it could be with community members, with their family, with each other, and that's authentic. It can truly be as simple as tally marks at early elementary, all the way up to larger needs assessment surveys in middle school and high school. As students move through that secondary level of, you know, middle school and high school, contextual research might involve something much deeper, like analyzing distinct local data and engaging in problem solving based on those insights. It might include connecting with a local archivist who can provide them with primary and secondary source documents in history and geography. And so it's really asking, what does it look like to be a historian, an economist, an engineer, whatever it is in our local situation? Number three, require deeper context in writing. So I mentioned before that I did this blog post about how we can design our writing prompts to be more AI resistant. And one of the key ideas is to bring context into it. So instead of saying, how does a bill become a law? You might say, describe a law that would impact your community in a positive way. Include specific examples of how the issue plays out in your neighborhood and how it impacts your local community. Then describe what would be needed in terms of a law at the local, statewide, and federal law level. And how do these processes vary? And what are the pros and cons of each approach? Notice this is much more complicated and much more challenging. But this is just the starting point. We can integrate contextual thinking into the research phase of every part of the writing process, including having peer reviewers who give feedback, including making sure that you are launching your work to an authentic audience. So you're tying context not just to the prompt, but to the revision process. I used to have community editors who were local who would pay close attention to, you know, word choice and ideas and stuff, but also helping students see how their writing could potentially impact their audience. Number four, include contextual elements in case studies. I often default to theoretical case studies when I have students engage in problem solving or discussions. However, this is a great opportunity to tie in contextual thinking. This might mean we find specific cases with a local context, or we provide a case with a different context, but ask students to examine those contextual elements. We can also include reflection questions about why a strategy or idea fits a specific situation. And we could ask questions about why a situation would work in one place but not in another. So I have a whole set of questions in the blog post that corresponds to this. I'm not going to read them all right now, but you get the idea. There's a bunch of questions that you could use to guide students through this process. As they grow stronger in contextual understanding, we can have students generate examples instead of only analyzing provided ones. This helps students develop the habit of asking, in what context do we see this play out? In other words, where would I use these skills? Or where does this particular concept occur in life? At a more advanced level, you can run simulations that require contextual thinking. And this would be something where students are walking through a game or a simulation on a regular basis to develop a deeper and deeper understanding. So instead of just doing a budget project in a high school economics class, students could do a budgeting simulation where they have specific ideas, strategies. They have a profile that they've created. They have a setting that they're a part of. And then they make these financial decisions based upon the context that you've given them. And this gives them real-world constraints and challenges that people face as they engage in the budgeting process. Number five, integrate design challenges, mini projects, and PBL. One of the things I love about project-based learning is it is built for students to engage with the community. They have an authentic audience. They have a challenge or a problem that needs to be solved. They're going to engage in research that goes beyond just looking up things online. So in every phase of the PBL process, there's a community connection piece. And that community connection piece is where they develop authentic contextual understanding. So whether they're interviewing an expert or launching their work to an audience, they're developing that contextual understanding. And then number six, teach students to provide context clues to chatbots. So I've written before and talked on this podcast about the FACTS prompt engineering process. One of those pieces of the process is create a context. And what I love is creating a context means giving it what's called a raft. So telling it what the role is, the audience, the format, and then I say tone instead of the idea of topic. But what you're doing is you're giving the AI context that it doesn't have, because remember, it cannot read the room. So there are more ideas for contextual understanding. You could do an internship program, an apprenticeship. You can do a reverse one where the community comes to your students with a challenge or problem and they develop products for them. There's all kinds of strategies that we can use. But the point is this, whether we are doing this in small ways or in big PBL or internships or service learning ways, the deeper reality is this. Every time we ask students to engage in contextual understanding, they not only learn the content at a deeper level, they develop the ability to think contextually and that will serve them for the rest of their lives. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you tell a friend, colleague, you know what? Tell a frenemy. That would be fine too. You can do that. Also, if you have not subscribed, that puts it right there in your podcast feed. And leave a review. Leaving a review is one of the best ways to pay it forward. You notice I don't do a ton of ads on this podcast. I really do this so that actual educators can get free PD, right, in a small way. And so with that in mind, just leaving a review or a like or whatever it is on those podcast platforms would mean the world to me. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.